Scott Parkinson is at the Club for Growth, so he is keeping an eye on things in Congress and also politically. A lot of news, major news developments this past week. We're going to talk about them with Scott Parkinson. Scott, as always, good to have you here.
Thanks for welcoming me back.
The one and only vice presidential debate took place this past week, and vice presidential debates usually don't move the needle a lot, but it appears that J.D. Vance did an amazing job and helped the ticket in many ways. Want to give us your opinion?
I think this is the first opportunity for a lot of people to see the direct contrast between Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, and J.D. Vance, the senator from Ohio. You know, everybody that is pretty politically wrapped up in things probably tuned into the DNC convention and the RNC's convention. But when you have a debate, it also gets a lot of new voters that don't want to get bored by just a bunch of speeches, but actually hear questions and answers to policy. And that was one of the big differences with this debate, was there were a lot of policy answers. That focus was there. I think J.D. Vance did a good job of articulating his background in Appalachia and why he wrote Hillbilly Elegy and why he joined the Marine Corps and just his personal story. And for a long time in politics, everybody has these low approval ratings and they're kind of made out to be the boogeyman. And there's all this negative coverage on people and their votes or their history or what, you know, anything that they've done. But a survey after the vice presidential debate showed that both Tim Walz and J.D. Vance improved upon their image, meaning their approval rating, what people think of them. And that's a positive thing, I think, for both sides of the ticket. Obviously, on the day of the debate, there was some controversy related to Tim Walz saying that he was in Hong Kong when Tiananmen Square happened. And ultimately, his hometown paper in Nebraska revealed that he was still stateside and hadn't yet traveled to Asia. So the truthfulness, the exaggeration on his military record, all the different things that Tim Walz has in his background still needs to come to light. And I think people are learning about that. You know, this week, Jake Tapper from CNN was talking about the debate and he said, well, you know, J.D. Vance has so much more experience debating and, you know, he's a senator. Well, Tim Walz is a career politician, right? He's been in office for, I think, about 30 years and served as a member of the House of Representatives, served as governor of Minnesota. So it's not like he's brand new to the scene and having to give a speech, but obviously he was pretty wound up and admittedly very nervous headed into the VP debate. To me, it's an exciting thing because J.D. Vance casts the vision for what America First looks like in a post-Trump world. And I think that actually brings more disconnected and forgotten voters from the Rust Belt and these key swing states like Michigan, Wisconsin, and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania over to the Trump side than any sort of a vision that I don't find compelling that the Democrats are laying out when it comes to things like reproductive rights and codifying Roe.
In the meantime, in addition to the debate, as I mentioned at the outset here, Scott, we had a very busy news week. Of course, we have large parts of the South suffering the aftermath of the hurricane. We have really an all-out war starting in the Mideast. I want to talk a bit about how these major developments are going to impact the presidential campaign.
Well, obviously, while this interview is broadcasting, we got the one-year anniversary of the October 7th attacks that Hamas laid upon the people of Israel, just a terrible terrorist attack. And this last week, Iran sent hundreds of missiles toward the Iron Dome. I think a lot of them were shot down. Obviously, the Israelis can sort of determine where the trajectory is headed, whether it's toward a rural area that's going to land in the desert or if it's going to land in a populated area and they shoot those down for the most part. You know, more than anything, it was an escalation following the perceived attacks. I think some of them have been taken credit for by Israel when it came to taking out the leader of Hezbollah and the pagers and the cell phones and all the stuff that's going on there. But simultaneously with the terrible hurricane and the flooding that we've seen in the Southeast all throughout America, just the stories that are continuing to be revealed now that people are coming back online, the desperation that a lot of communities are still feeling, not just from flooding, but from mudslides. Now, this is a very mountainous area, and especially when you think about Georgia and North Carolina, communities been totally wiped out. I was talking to a member of Congress earlier this week in Florida, and Ana Paulina Luna's district had, I think, 11 deaths and 55,000 people displaced. Terrible situation all across America. You know, I think that you're going to see Congress come back at some point and do a supplemental appropriations to sort of cover the shortfall, because Alejandro Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security, admitted this week that FEMA just doesn't have the funds to deal with the hurricane season. There is some funding in place right now to help in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Helene, but the problem is that this administration has prioritized equity at FEMA instead of emergency disaster response, and they have sent a lot of money into the illegal alien population that has flooded our country and ultimately depleted FEMA's budget.
As you look then at all these problems that have occurred, throw in also the longshoremen strike as well here, Scott, will this have an impact on the election? We have only about 4 weeks left to go.
The answer is absolutely right. And the question is, what type of an impact, what level, how severe will this impact the electoral outcome? It's very difficult to look into that crystal ball and tell us what's going to happen on November 5th. But there's always October surprises. And in political science, there's a group known as nature of the time voters, right? So whatever the big events are happening in October can sway their vote. Obviously, you have strong ideologues that are going to vote based on Republican conservative principles. And on the other side of the coin, the Democrats that vote with progressives. But you do have people that want to feel things out and hold on till the end. And when you have close elections in America, whether it's a couple of bellwether counties in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, or think about Florida in the year 2000, or just what's happened in Nevada and Arizona with their elections recently, we know this is going to be a close race. People need to get out there and do early voting, bank your vote, make sure you're dragging other friends to the poll.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. We're going to continue tracking all of this over the next month with him. Scott, tell us a little bit about the club.
Club for Growth is based out of Washington, D.C. Our membership, it boasts 525,000 members, united in this idea of economic freedom, opportunity, and liberty. If you want to learn more, visit us at clubforgrowth.org. You can sign up and become a member for free.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, again, thank you for being here.
You are welcome.